Hello, welcome to the football show with me, Kevin, tonight. I'm in studio with Richie. It's been a good night, Rich, hasn't it?
It's been an enjoyable night of football. See, we've got to enjoy the football at our leisure because we haven't been nipping in and out of the studio to do, like, frankly, annoying pieces on the radio. We've been able to watch a football match at our leisure.
Exactly, sit down for a good half there and watched it. It's unusual, isn't it?
When you've been like the listener.
Yeah, it's been good. They have been impressive, though. Tottenham, one thing I spoke about early on before the game, probably teed up Juve, Dybala back and Matuidi back for them. But they just had no impact on the game, have they? It's just been Tottenham steamrolling with the direct style, and it's been excellent to watch.
They have been pretty full on almost since minute one. It's something that you said in the news round earlier on, that Spurs will need to be pretty gung-ho from the off to impose their pace upon the game to try and ask questions of Juventus. They've done that multiple times. To their credit, Juve should have had a first half penalty. You have to throw it on in there too. Jan Vertonghen with what looked like a pretty obvious foul on Douglas Costa as we watched Dybala blaze a shot. He slices one with his left foot wide of Hugo Lloris's right hand upright. That is after a poor clearance from Davinson Sanchez. But we mentioned Douglas Costa. He was going through in that right hand channel. He'd seemingly gotten past Jan Vertonghen. Vertonghen put in the sliding challenge on him and made contact, I think not once but twice. It ultimately looked like Costa took a step to try and get over the challenge, but instead what felled him was contact from Vertonghen's studs with his Achilles area.
It was a definite penalty, and I think it was Richie Sadler was talking about it there in the RT panel tonight. It was where the assistant behind the goal stood. He's in a great position. He's probably three, four yards. He is, and there is a reluctancy you do feel from the assistants behind the goals to make an actual key decision, and that was a thing that's certainly gone against Juve tonight. But take that aside, you can't overstate the fact is that Tottenham have just been so dominant. They should be more up. Kane's missed a good chance in the first half. Ali's been very good tonight, but it's that man Son again. Son has been, and Eriksen of course, but Son just, his form in the last few months has been outstanding. I think that's 15 goals from now this season, I think I'd be right in saying, and he's just, you know, he's been that player last season where you think if anyone's going to get left out, it would be Son. And this season, he's proved, well, certainly in the last two or three months, he's proved indispensable. He's been absolutely brilliant for them.
If I was Mauricio Pochettino, and God knows I'm not, I would rather be able to live without Dele Alli, or I think I'd be able to live without Dele Alli, as Juventus have the ball in the Tottenham net. It's Gonzalo Higuain. He is pumping his fist, and here we go indeed. There's 63 minutes played at Wembley. Gonzalo Higuain has gotten on the end of that Juventus chance. They are level on the night, and it is now 3-3 on aggregate. Spurs, as things stand, still going ahead on away goals, but it's a rather more glum expression that's across the face of the Spurs manager Mauricio Pochettino. It's a chance worked on the right hand side. It's a ball played for Dybala out to, is it Berzal?
No, it's Lichtsteiner,
I think. He's just come on in the past few minutes from Eddie Benatia. A flick on inside the box. It was Sami Khedira who got his head to it, and then left by Blaise Matuidi for Gonzalo Higuain, who prods the ball past Hugo Lloris. So Juve are level on that. We were talking them down. We're about to say they're pretty much out of this, but they're right back in it. It is Tottenham 1, Juventus 1, 3-3 on aggregate, but Spurs still with the advantage of that away goal. But another goal for Juventus tonight could change very much everything.
It's amazing, Rich, because what I was looking down and I saw the substitutions. He brought Asamoah on and he brought Lichtsteiner on, and I'm looking at the two subs going, maybe Asamoah will make a difference, but is Lichtsteiner going to be that difference? I suppose maybe taking Barzali off, who, it has been quite cumbersome tonight. I think he struggled to deal with Son. I think with Lichtsteiner, he will get more of an attacking threat. And I think now what he's done, he's playing so high and wide, he's forcing Son back. So Tottenham are on a little bit of a retreat here. And it was Lichtsteiner got to the byline, put a good cross in. So it's certainly made a difference with what Allegri's done tactically here. Yeah.
Just to clarify there, he's actually moved Barzali into the centre where Benatia had occupied that role alongside Chiellini. Benatia picked up a yellow card along the way too. So Benatia has made way for Lichtsteiner, who's now operating as that right wing back, and they have Kwadwo Asamoah in for Blaise Matuidi in midfield. So they haven't changed much. They've made tweaks rather than wholesale changes. They're going chasing this game as Max Allegri, but they are right back in it.
We've got there, Rich. Now 25 minutes to go. It's just set up brilliantly now, isn't it?
It's prime for them. Actually, I was just going to say that their modus operandi now for the next few minutes would be to strangle the life out of this game, have as much keep ball as possible, and just demoralise Tottenham to the point where you might hope they're going to nick a goal pretty late on.
Exactly. We must stress it's still 1-1 at City. It's irrelevant, the result really, there now tonight. This Basel simply aren't going to go through, so it'll be City into the next round there. So we wait and see how Spurs go here. But this is a big test now for the side. We spoke of Juve just being able to stay in games. They have been under a little bit of pressure tonight as well, and that is what they've done, so fair play to them.
Yeah. Elsewhere tonight, we should mention too that Wolves are going to stretch their lead at the top of the Championship to 6 points, barring a complete collapse over the course of the next 25 minutes or thereabouts. Roman Sass got the opening goal for them away to Leeds tonight. Willie Bolly got the second there just before the break.
Rich is in again.
Wolves 2, and it's Dybala. He scores!
Dybala, 2-1.
Tie has been turned completely on its head. Juventus are now leading on aggregate. They have matched Tottenham's number of away goals, and we could well yet be in for extra time tonight.
Unbelievable. We do actually have Philippe Eclair on the line with us now. Philippe, I don't know if you're watching this game this evening, but it's just turned on. It said since Spurs totally dominant. It's just great just to see the way that it's turned around so quickly.
Yes, to be honest, I wouldn't say I'd seen it coming, but a little bit. I don't think it was possible for Juve to be playing so far behind or beneath their usual level for so long. And the reorganization of the team by Allegri has worked a treat,
yeah.
I have to say. It's Allegri decided to go to a back four. And suddenly, and Tottenham, you know, looking a little bit nervy, which I suppose you've got to be.
Yeah.
They're in a situation where this group of players has never been in such a situation before.
Yeah, I think that was a thing, say, watching Spurs, that being in this position, such a crucial stage, they were so good in that first game. And all of a sudden, when you get to key moments in games like this, and it's how your style can change. And that's what Tottenham have done. Tottenham, all of a sudden, with that dual substitution, it just changes the mentality, the mindset of them. Now, all of a sudden, Tottenham now under severe pressure here now, and now they have to force the issue and go for the goal themselves.
Yeah, but at some stage, you kind of figure, Philippe, that Tottenham have got to create their own experience, if you know what I mean. Like we've spoken before about how they've never won anything under Mauricio Pochettino or recent managers, anything of great significance anyway. And you're kind of wondering where the breakthrough is going to come from, and people say that they lack experience. We saw that in the latter stages of their challenge for the title up against, was it Leicester City? We saw that, I suppose, at this point now in the Champions League, where they appear to be on the back foot against Juventus. But at some stage, they just do have to step up and say, enough, we can do this. We can get by these sides. We can make an imprint in the latter stages of these competitions.
Well, they did in the first game when they were, you know, 2-0 down. So I wouldn't bet against them to come back and to force this into extra time. But this is, I mean, but how wonderful is it to see a proper Champions League game after what we saw yesterday? Quite a marked difference, I should say.
Yeah, well, as I say, Philippe, that's what we actually did get you to come on for tonight, this evening. Last night, PSG 1, Real Madrid 2. I was over in Paris last night for the game, Philippe, and it was, for all the talk before the game, there were so many positive signs coming out from PSG. Unai Emery saying about how tactically they'd improved from last season, how they were really over what happened against Barcelona, and they were going to go and force the issue. There was talk of ultras being outside Real Madrid's hotel. So much positivity before the game, and it was a great atmosphere. It was just so disappointing watching PSG last night, the way that they started the game, and of course the way the result went for them.
Yes, and I mean, some wags have been saying in France that the ultras from Paris, instead of going to the Real Madrid players' hotel, they should have gone to the PSG players' hotel to wake them up. And I thought it was rather funny. It was an absolutely appalling performance, and they never got going. They were absolutely hammered in the medias and everywhere, actually, in France. And one of the reasons is that there was so much hype before the game, and there was so much coming from PSG saying, we can do it. And of course, summoning the ghosts of what happened a long time ago, over 25 years ago, when it was a different PSG, when it was the PSG of Ginola and so forth, and Ryan and others. And to make people think it was possible. In a way, they overdid it. And I don't know if it made the players more self-conscious and if it actually made them so tense that they couldn't express themselves at all. But it really felt like just a group of players who never had played necessarily together. Loads of very poor performances individually. I mean, Verratti, you know, it's becoming a real problem with him. Is that there is a wonderful player in there. Or is it that there was a wonderful player in there and that his temperament just simply is not suited to that? And even Mbappe, I don't know what you thought about it, but where is the Kylian Mbappe that we saw, who was so magnificent with Monaco all through the Champions League campaign last season and in Ligue 1 as well? So obviously everybody knows Unai Emery is going to go. Now the talk is starting to be about who is going to succeed Unai Emery at PSG. People are saying that Arsene Wenger has been contacted again by PSG. Can you believe it? Other people were talking about Mauricio Pochettino, though if Spurs get out at this stage of the competition, no doubt PSG will think about somebody else, because that's the way they work. And I thought what we thought was an indictment of a particular way of managing a club, which is basically of not managing a club. And I think this is what people are now pointing out. The great unanimity of around PSG that before the game was fictitious. And the whole project. It's not just the team. It's not just the players. It's not just the manager. It's the whole project is now being questioned in France, and I think by many PSG supporters too.
Philippe, we talk about the project in terms of Paris Saint-Germain, in terms of what they're trying to achieve. Like, ultimately, obviously, Ligue 1 is never going to be enough for them. They want to win the Champions League.
Yeah.
But if, like, I don't want to draw a comparison that's slightly ill-advised, but if you look at a side like, what they remind me of is Rangers in the early to mid-90s, whereby they're a big club with a few bob to spend, but ultimately, with really good players as well, it has to be said, by the comparison to those around them. But ultimately, when week in, week out, you're not playing really, really brilliant sides, to raise your level to the pitch that you need to be at to play a Real Madrid in the last 16 of the Champions League, to all of a sudden have to switch that on, it's not necessarily all that possible all the time. And at some stage, you're going to get caught. And if you're coming up against a canny operator like Zinedine Zidane, and as he's proved to be, and tactically, he definitely proved to be that last night, you're going to fail.
Yeah, and so they did. And it is a big problem, but it is an insolvable problem. Because what do you do? Do you start loaning your own players to other teams so that they're a bit stronger when you play against them? It's true that this season, I mean, their defeats came in games. I mean, it was circumstances more than anything else. And there are perhaps two teams who can genuinely give them a game, and that's it. The rest of the time, basically, is demonstration. It's a bit what... it's a kind of equivalent of... the SPL. I'm sorry to say that, but that is what it is. And there is no competition. Now, the only competition should come in the Champions League. In fairness, if you look at who they've drawn in the round of 16 and quarterfinals in recent years, they haven't been too lucky.
No.
Yeah. But on the other hand, it's true that there is a structural problem. What do you do when you're a club which is so... I mean, which is way ahead of the competition? What can you do? I don't know. I mean, perhaps instill more discipline. You know, we've talked about it, I think, together. But when, you know, you remember what happened around when Neymar had his birthday, which lasted three days. Also, there are the rumors that there have been around the club of dissent within the dressing room, of players not necessarily getting on with each other, of clans within the dressing room. Well, suddenly, when you listen to the comments of the players after the elimination by Real Madrid, you realize that they're actually alluding to it, and that actually there might have been something about it.
Yeah, Julian Draxler was one of those in particular, sorry Kev, who came out last night and basically dumped Emery in the fire, basically by saying that, you know, he brought me on too late. I know he was bringing me on and Cavani got the goal, but ultimately I should have been on by that stage anyway. Yeah. And we could have had the opportunity to change the game.
Can I just pick up on that as well, Laurie? You're saying there, put to Philip, so just regarding that with Unai Emery, were the other club just quite content to have that character that's almost weak, that the players can walk over because of the caliber of player that they're signing?
Well, the thing is that you've got to realize that this is not at all an operation which is run to make a comparison, which is, I think, a very valid comparison, like Manchester City, because it's very much the same kind of political sport project, or, you know, you can call it whatever you want, soft power propaganda, whatever. Anyway, they've got the same kind of resources. On one hand, you've got a genuine project, whatever you think of it and the source of the money. There's a genuine project which has led to the appointment of Pep Guardiola, which is also linked with all of these feeder clubs that they're starting all around the planet, with the academy and so forth. There's something happening which has been planned and which is executed with a great deal of skill by some terrific, terrific professionals. And with players who, by the way, are much cheaper than the players that PSG goes for. The most expensive transfer, I think, for Manchester City was Emeric Laporte, the central defender. You know, so we're not talking about Kylian Mbappe, 189 million or 222 million for Neymar. By the way, guys, you know this will have an impact on PSG this summer because of financial fair play, this getting out of the competition that early. It's a big, big loss for them, financially speaking. I'm pretty sure they hadn't bet on getting out in the round of 16.
Will that affect that Mbappe deal then?
No, it won't, because it's a clause. Do you remember the fantastic clause that Mbappe was a loan that was turned into a purchase?
Yeah.
Should one clause be respected? And the clause was, should PSG not be relegated?
Oh, right.
Listen,
it happened with Racing before in the 80s when they signed Francescoli and all that. So
yeah, you know, it's not going to happen mathematically. I think they're safe. It's a complete. We've got two completely different approaches. What seems to be the same model, actually, it's not the same model at all. I don't think there is the same structure in place at Paris Saint-Germain, not at all. The manager as well has got his hands tied behind his back because it's all about the superstars and it's all about Neymar. It's completely crazy, actually. It's so much about a single man, It's almost, I would say, an impossible job for whoever is managing this team, because you know you wonder how it's possible just to deal with the egos, to deal with as well the pressures from people who are not necessarily very football aware. I'm being polite here. Mm. Within the board, you can't really see where the expertise has gone. You know, Leonardo is no longer there. We're not absolutely. Mm. There's a lot of front. There's a lot of image. There's a lot of presentation. There's a lot of stars, but there isn't a club.
Yeah, I'm just saying this. Sorry, Rich. I looked at last night when I saw that team, and I even saw a Real Madrid team. I probably had reservations over the Real Madrid side. I thought there was a side that could be got at. But I look back, and you've got five players who are 30 or over. You've got Thiago Silva, 33, Thiago Motta, which in the face of it, Thiago Motta, I think, has been a fabulous player, but that looked a huge mistake in playing him last night, given how Real Madrid set up against him. Then you've got Dani Alves, Di Maria and Cavani, all 30 or more. You know, for all that we've spoken about the money being spent on these amazing footballers, young footballers in Neymar and Mbappe, this squad, the nucleus of it, hasn't really changed in the last 3 or 4 years, really, the key players in there.
No, they haven't addressed what are long-standing problems, which are in midfield and in the defence. And the players, they've recruited a few players, like Lo Celso, for example, has come. And also, it's quite difficult to understand why a player like Thomas Meunier, for example, who is younger, more energetic, good, very good player, by the way, we'll see him play for Belgium in the World Cup, is not preferred to, say, Dani Alves, who is past his sell-by date. I mean, who has been a magnificent player, but he's no longer the player of yore. So yes, there are glaring, holes in this squad which haven't been addressed, because the policy has been to recruit Galacticos, and that's it. When you spend something like over 400 million on two attacking players in the space of 2 years, or actually in the space of 13 months, I mean, that says an awful lot about the kind of club that you are.
It's probably a bit, I don't know if it's a bit out there to think that, but it seems like a lot of the situation, especially in terms of the Galacticos and the squad's attitude, would be rectified not only by having a strong manager in there, but obviously if that strong manager mm-hmm. comes in the summer and jettisons Neymar, because you're not going to get like 2 million quid of a knockdown in the price from him. You're going to get pretty much what you paid from last summer if you were to sell him on. I know Real Madrid will be one of those sides that potentially won't be interested, but you're going to get money from him, whoever he goes to, and he would, you know, his leaving would seemingly on the surface rectify a lot of the problems in that dressing room.
That's quite a fanciful idea. I'm not absolutely sure that the PSG owners would look at it way.
But ultimately, that's the problem that
it
they're going to do.
Admission of,
yeah. But they're going to keep cycling back into that problem unless they have a manager who's willing to put their foot down and say, "Listen, Neymar, you're not going to do this. I'm the person who's laying down the tactical plan for the team. I'm the man who's going to lay down where we're going to set out for the next 6 months to a year. This is the way it's going to be." And a Neymar doesn't accept that kind of thing all that regularly.
Yeah, and the thing is that it's been the PSG managers have been in this position before, even when Neymar was not around. Because don't forget, it's also that it was we had the Zlatan Cavani situation as well, for example, where it seemed that managers had to more or less try to placate, you know, the big stars first and foremost. Their job was like, I remember Laurent Blanc when he was there being described not as a manager but as the director of human resources. So it was all about management of the various egos, of which there was a huge number in this dressing room, as there is today. So you need a manager who is going to be strong enough to do this. And on the other hand, also, you will need owners and a chairman, you know, and I'm talking about Nasser Al Khelaifi here, who is going to be willing to give this power to the manager and not to try and undermine him. I'm sorry. I mean, I can't believe that Tottenham haven't equalised yet. But there you go.
I know, we're going to comment. Yeah, Ericsson having a shot that was deflected just wide. Spurs have a corner to try and equalise on the night and maybe force this thing to extra time with 8.5 minutes or just less to go.
But again, Wembley. The contrast of what we saw last night is so incredible in terms of intensity, in terms of the quality of the teams as well. Because I think, I don't know, I would like to have, you know, I don't know. I personally thought it was a very poor game last night.
And they've just flashed another one wide through Heung-min Son as well. Sorry, Philippe.
Oh, my goodness. Stop it. Because also, I'm 1 minute, 30 seconds behind you.
You'll see that shot coming your way now.
Spoiler alert. Sorry, Philippe.
No, but you spoke about that. That was the thing. I touched on that at the start when I was talking to you there, Philippe. That was the thing. I went to that game last night and I'm seeing the team, the way that they've played over the last few years in big games. And I didn't necessarily have the alarm bells ringing going to the game like Barcelona last season, but it was all that surely they have learnt from that. And that was the thing that I was so disappointed, that how they just didn't start the game in any way, like with any sort of pace. And then even as the game went on, as you say, as Tottenham have done tonight, Tottenham have had to have a goal for it now. Of course they have. Juve have had to go for it. So this is swinging both ways. That was just such an easy game. It felt to me watching it for Real Madrid last night.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and it's not a great Real Madrid side. It's not as good as the side which has.
No.
I mean, it's not as good as it was when it won these two Champions League finals. I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. In fact, you could say that PSG has regressed.
Yeah.
Since you know, you remember that amazing tie, two-legged tie against Barcelona, where they were so unlucky to go out. That was what, 3-4 years ago. And where they were really unlucky. They gave a really good account of themselves. This time it hasn't been the case. It wasn't the case, I mean, last year in terms of what happened in the so-called remontada and whatever they think of the refereeing. So, yes, in a way they're regressing.
Yeah, but you said though as well, though, yeah, in relation to a strong manager, you know, that certainly managers that's available now, I think Ancelotti, Luis Enrique, people like this, I suppose, as well. And then you've got the names like maybe Allegri tonight, Pochettino and Jose Mourinho that's been linked with that job a few times. Is the talk, or is there any suggestion on who they'll go for over there? Or is it just a process now until the end of the season that they're going to actually just wait and maybe even let Unai Emery finish the season off for PSG?
Well, I think he should finish the season and win the title. They can still win the treble. And the extraordinary thing, that the treble will mean absolutely nothing. Can you believe that? I mean, this is extraordinary. Yeah. Something which was looked as an apex and an extraordinary achievement for any club is now thought of as, yeah, that's kind of the minimum that you should win, because this is not this is not what you're going to be judged on. You're going to be judged on the Champions League and just the Champions League. Apparently, they've approached already quite a few managers. Telling every single manager that they were the definite choice, which is a funny way to go about your business.
I don't know if you're hedging your bets, it's probably the best way to go about it, Philippe.
Yeah, that's one way of doing it. Anyway, they must have some kind of plan, I suppose. I'm not too sure about it. I was very interested to see Arsene Wenger's name being quoted in a number of places, because obviously he has got a connection with the club. Mm. He's got a connection with the owners of the club as well through his work with beIN Sport or Al Jazeera. And it might be that they want somebody who is going to calm everybody down and, you know, who's got large enough experience. I know it might sound crazy to people who support Arsenal, but to actually put a bit of oil on choppy waters. Otherwise, yes, it's the usual suspects. But what can I say? It's still, I mean, can you tell me actually which minute you are on at
the top of the game? We're killing you off here.
We've just ticked into 86 there, Philippe. We've just ticked into 86.
Okay, so you're 37 seconds ahead of me. So
sorry,
there you go.
We do send our apologies on that.
Philippe, we'll let you go. We'll let you go and watch the end of the game. Thanks very much for your time this evening. Thank you.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Cheers, Philippe. It is a funny situation, Paris Saint-Germain. There's going to be no sorting this unless they get a person of strength, let's say, in that managerial position. Or as Philippe alluded to there, the lack of Leonardo in terms of a director of football kind of role. It seems like they almost need an intermediary between the board and management to try and address the steering of the ship, at least in European terms. We had Ken in Clontarf, Texas, 5316. If you want to get in contact tonight for 30 cents or at Off the Ball as well, be delighted to hear from you. Why was Neymar in Paris last night, or in Brazil last night instead of Paris, sitting in the stands, giving his teammates moral support? PSG are a dysfunctional group of disinterested players, says Ken. Well, Ken, Neymar did manage to tweet from Brazil last night after the match.
Yeah.
He said, this is now translating it from Portuguese via Microsoft Translate, not even Google Translate. So my apologies for this one if it's subpar. But it says via Neymar, I am sad for defeat, much sadder for not being on the field helping my companions. What makes me proud is to see everyone's effort. Congratulations, pals. Allez Paris.
Ah, there we go.
There you go. That's fine. Everything's fine.
I think that just takes us nicely to the break. It's still Tottenham 1, Juventus 2. We'll be back after this.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Oh, welcome back to Off the Ball.
I lost an earphone there, Kevin.
I'll tell you what, Richie McCormack there is up off his seat. This is just unbelievable stuff at the end of the scene. Harry Kane has just hit the post and then Juve cleared off the line. Do you want to talk us through it, Rich? Talk us through what happened. Cross coming from the left-hand side.
Cross coming from the left-hand side. It was Harry Kane who got something on it here. We're just watching a replay of it here. Kane rises highest of all. It bounces. It stumbles towards the post. It looks like Buffon might have got a fingertip across it, and it goes directly back across the line before ultimately being cleared off it. And it is still, as they go into added time at Wembley Stadium, it was Andrea Barzagli who got that clearance. It's Tottenham 1, Juventus 2, Juve leading 4-3 on aggregate. They are playing 3 minutes of added time at Wembley, 3 minutes of added time. And as things stand, of course, Juventus are going through, but this has been breathless stuff for the past 15 minutes. We have to say, during the course, we didn't want to interrupt Philippe too much, but there were a number of chances during the course of our conversation there, most notably from a Spurs perspective. Spurs very much bossing the last few minutes, but Juve playing that old Juve game of taking everything out of the ball, inviting on challenges, winning free kicks. Gianluigi Buffon was spoken to by the referee for his time wasting from one of those goal kicks as well. They're now just looking to take the sting out of the ball.
I tell you
pretty
what,
much
you
sit
well,
on it down the corner.
I have to say as well, you and I were talking about it outside here as well. What about when Chiellini's made a block as well? Ball comes into the area and he gets up, it's all high fives. Everybody can picture it, would have seen it last season. Any sort of cross into the area, any sort of shot, when one of them makes a block, immediately up, high five with Gigi Buffon. Oh, good chance there as well.
Yeah, it was Stefano Sturaro who has come on in the past few moments there for Gonzalo Higuain, who has turned and shot with his left foot but saved easily by Hugo Lloris. But it is the shot that's going to be the picture that's going to be all over the papers tomorrow, all over the websites this evening. When this result goes through, if it does go through in Juve's favour, that sight again for the umpteenth time of Giorgio Chiellini and Gianluigi Buffon pretty much arm in arm, screaming, roaring in each other's faces and willing each other on to try and get each other over the line, because it's going to take an almighty effort for these last 1 minute and 20 odd seconds. Spurs have another chance down the right hand side. Kieran Trippier trying to send it inside, but ultimately gathered by Gianluigi Buffon. And again, take everything out of the ball. He's lying down. Mauricio Pochettino is trying to cheer on his charges for one final assault on Juve. It is going to take something big from Spurs. There are a couple of Spurs fans stupid enough to try and leave at the moment at Wembley, try and beat that traffic.
Do you know what as well, Lloris? What does it say as well for Tottenham? Well, what a blow this is for them. You know, they've been so good. They were so good in that first game over in Turin. I touched on it earlier on. They've dominated, haven't they? And we spoke about the experience. Is it the experience? I don't know. Or maybe a couple of lapses of concentration that you maybe look back on and you'll think that's what's cost you tonight, because that's ultimately what it is. They've had very few chances. Hugo Lloris hasn't had too much to do all evening, and they've just been caught with some great defending and a sucker punch.
They did play a very, very high line, in particular for that second Juventus goal that's put them ahead. as the, again, there's another stoppage in play out on that right hand side, a foul on Dybala, and it is a free kick that is going to go Juventus' way. Mauricio Pochettino ruefully shakes his head, asks why to the fourth official. What's it given for? He asks. The ref blows his whistle. It's going to be into the last couple of seconds of added time. They might add on something more here. Max Allegri slightly more animated on the bench. The ball's cleared by Gianluigi Buffon up that left hand channel. It's gone out for a throw, which will be to Spurs. They're going to take it quickly and try and lump it up the field as quickly as they possibly can, because they are still leading or trailing. They're gone, they're out. It is Juventus who prevail. The old lady of Turin marches on. 115th appearances will become 116 and possibly 117 in the Champions League for Gianluigi Buffon. They're travelling fans jubilant at Wembley Stadium. It has finished. Tottenham 1, Juventus 2 on the night. Juve through 4-3 on aggregate. Proper Champions League football, Kev.
Absolutely amazing. We do have football journalist John Bruin on the line. John, what do you make of that then this evening? It was just breathless stuff, really, wasn't it?
Absolutely, Kevin. I suppose it swung, didn't it? It's strange, isn't it, that as soon as that first goal went in, Spurs still had that narrow lead through the away goal, but something went wrong maybe in their psychology at that point. And then they made the mistake for the second goal. Great finish by Dybala, who is a very, very good player and who was obviously missing in the previous leg. And a mistake by Davinson Sanchez, you have to say, stepping out, getting caught. And Spurs have been taught a lesson there by a team that, I mean, Juventus haven't lost since November. And they're a team used to finding their way to win. And I heard you chaps talking there about the way that they've been celebrating the defensive tackles and stuff like that. Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of sometimes when you watch, you know, big rugby games where they win a penalty.
There's a big hit or something like that, and somebody gets a big tackle.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and they just sort of right. Yeah, that's. I mean, the thing is though, whenever you watch Italian teams, and what you probably have to remember about Italian football is that they take just as much pride in defending as they do attacking football. And maybe that was the difference between the two teams there, because okay, they were getting a hell of a run around in that first half with Barzagli against Sun was a pretty much an unfair contest. I thought Harry Kane was excellent, playing a different role, essentially playing a, you know, real sort of, I know, classic sort of late period Alan Shearer sort of target man. And just before that goal, you would have said, you know, this cannot be going any better. Juventus look old. They look eight, you know, they look past it. And then, of course, they know how to get the job done, don't they?
That canny little tweak from Allegri worked absolute wonders, John. That's bringing Barzagli into the centre, sacrificing Bonatti, who picked up the yellow card, and putting Lichtsteiner down that right-hand side. It all changed for them after that point.
Yeah, him and Asamoah. I mean, there you go. I mean, there's two players that, I mean, you know, I've watched Juventus down the years. I remember those two playing very well at Chelsea, a game sort of six, seven seasons ago. They just have those players that know the job. And Allegri is one of those managers who just knows his way around a game. He knows scenarios. And, you know, despite the fact that they've won the last, I think they're on for the seventh Serie A title this season, should they win it? I mean, yeah. You know, they're sort of fighting it with Napoli. They have to fight their way through that. And it's little wonder that Allegri is one of those names that's linked with a few, I suppose, richer clubs over here. But yeah, you know, Lichtsteiner was probably the player that turned it for them. He's an experienced campaigner, you know, you don't really expect too much of him, but knows his job, and they have those players to bring on.
Yeah, I think we knew before the game tonight, didn't we? We kind of sensed, look, this is one of those games that certainly isn't dead, and you look at the players that they were able to bring back in, you reference them there, Dybala particularly, he was maybe that key player. But what does this tell us then about Spurs? Because they've had some big seasons now over the last few years. They've finished second a couple of times in the Premier League, just a little bit off maybe in Champions League. They've not necessarily been able to turn in a performance like they did over in Turin. So what is this now saying about Tottenham? Are we going to go back to the old ones of mentally fragile? Are we going to start talking along this sort of line? Or are we saying that, look, they've just been undone tonight by maybe a more experienced, better prepared Champions League team?
Well, I think at the outset you should say that Juventus have been to two of the last three finals. So, I mean, there's no disgrace in losing to a team like that. I think the disappointment would be in the fact that, you know, a 2-2 draw Inter in, that's a fantastic result. The problem is you have to finish the job back at Wembley. And they didn't get it finished. They were, you know, 25 minutes out. That's pretty much the problem with them. What was it say about Spurs? It says that there are certain rough edges to be smoothed out. And Pochettino, as a manager, isn't particularly experienced in European football, is he? I mean, they've had a couple of runs in Europa League. I remember a couple of seasons ago, against a game against Fiorentina, he pretty much threw it to go for the league title. I suppose the question we might ask is, when it really does come to the crunch, have Pochettino's teams come through? And we start to think about it, games like the sort of meltdown they had at Stamford Bridge. Remember a couple of seasons ago when they were winning 2-0 and then drew 2-2. They lost to West Ham last season on the run-in. There might be just that psychological edge that's missing. And you do wonder, we talked about those experienced players that Juventus have, if they had just a couple of players, were able to bring them in, a bit more experience, then that might change things. But the way that Tottenham run things, players like that presumably cost big wages. Tottenham don't pay big wages. It's a desperate disappointment for Tottenham because, I mean, that's been the most exciting Champions League campaign since, well, back in Harry Redknapp days. And, yeah, you've got to say they're going to meet... You've got to say that, you know, the questions will be raised, and also the questions about the players will be raised, about what will happen to Harry Kane, Real Madrid circling, all that type of thing. It's one of those nights where you don't imagine that the likes of Pochettino, Daniel Levy will be getting much sleep. There's going to be a lot of anxiety after that.
John, you kind of feel like this is a cycle that we find ourselves in with Tottenham for the last 2-3 seasons. You mentioned that title tilt when they capitulated and towards the end, and that draw with Chelsea and Leicester ultimately prevailing. And now this time around again, the Champions League. We mentioned with Philippe the lack of experience in these types of scenarios hampering them. It seems like we're going to be back here again next year, because unless they actually change the way they recruit players, they're not going to get that experience that they need, that knowledge of latter stages of competitions, that knowledge of winning leagues. Something needs to alter here, whether it's, I don't know if it's going to be the manager, I don't know if it's going to be bringing in a 33-year-old hard case in midfield. It feels like we're going to be here this time next year talking about a brave effort from Tottenham in the last 16, last day of the Champions League possibly, and what are they going to do again next year? I don't see any stopping it.
No, and I suppose you in a funny way, you probably draw a comparison to Arsenal there, couldn't you? In the fact that it...
Well, we're going to get letters there, John. Thanks for that.
No, well, I know, but I mean, in the sense that, you know, you might find them living out the same season again and again. But at the moment, Tottenham are in that flush, aren't they? That flush of excitement about the players they've got. And, you know, if we're able to cast back to that, you know, that first 30, 40 minutes, you know, with Son in particular playing well, Eriksen buzzing around, Ali, perhaps not the player we've seen in previous seasons, and then Kane playing so well, as I said, that is a really exciting, exciting team to watch. I suppose one thing, if you could say, one of the reasons that it perhaps didn't go so well, it didn't go as well as it did in Turin, is Dembele didn't quite get into the game. I think they'd obviously worked on that, a way to stop him being able to carry the ball so for such distances that he does. I just think, you know, one of the things is Pochettino himself, he's a manager that shifts his tactics around. He's not, you would say, like Arsene Wenger. I'm making that comparison again, I know. But he's someone that varies his tactics a little bit. But does he have that canniness in those big games? And what motivational... you know, man motivation is going on behind the scenes. We don't really know that. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about him. I think if you speak to fans of other clubs, they will say that Tottenham get a lot of praise without achieving anything. And that's going to be one of those things. I think, actually, if we look at the season as a whole, the FA Cup is still within their grasp. And I really think that Tottenham could do with winning that trophy. I know it's something that Maurizio Pochettino has dismissed, saying that he doesn't consider it important. But look at the league. The 5 points clear of Chelsea, a team in crisis. 13 points of Arsenal, they're gone. The top four is very doable for them. It's within their reach. let's give the FA Cup a go. That's what I'd be saying if I was Maurizio Pochettino.
Now, that is a very Arsenal outlook.
I know. I mean, it's quite... Well, I think you're looking at it. You're going to look at it a lot more with maybe a grim sense after that tonight, aren't you? Given the fact is that how well they played. You touched on Dembele there, John, perfectly. I thought he was absolutely outstanding in that first game. Just didn't get into the game tonight like he did in that first match. But I think if you're looking at the bigger picture, there will maybe be questions asked of Spurs. You know, long term, what is going to happen? Are they going to stabilise over the next few years with that stadium being built? Are they going to be like Arsenal over the next few years, albeit maybe slightly better version of Arsenal? Because it's quite conceivable that could actually happen.
Well, yes, and the other thing, of course, we have to consider if we're going to continue on that Arsenal road, Arsenal will have a different manager next season. Now, I'm fairly convinced of this, and I'm sure most people are. So that changes things. It might even be Massimiliano Allegri, of course, which would be very interesting. And I'm sure among Arsenal fans, they think he's the bee's knees right now. But, what you've got is a Tottenham really do... I don't know, what were you expecting from Tottenham now? I mean, that new stadium, as Kevin said, that really does change everything for them. But again... There's teething problems with moving into a new stadium that we've seen with other clubs. Again, there's another Arsenal comparison to be made. It's going to be a very difficult few months. And I think this weekend and the next few weeks will be difficult. Next few days and hours are going to be difficult for them.
I want to talk for a second before we let you go, John, about Juventus. You mentioned there that defensively they are a side that absolutely loves that end of the game. There is that old... Italian saying that the best possible game is a 0-0 because nobody has made a mistake. We see that constantly with Juve, especially in European competition, that they are excited about defending. They're excited about getting their body in the way of a shot. They're excited about blocking a challenger. They just like defending, and that's something that is hard to breed into a side. But when you have someone like Giorgio Chiellini, when you have Barzagli in there, when you have Gianluigi Buffon anchoring the whole thing in goal, it's something to behold in and of itself to watch a team being able to defend that well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, personally speaking, one of my very favourite matches of all time was at Euro 2000, and it was when Italy go down to 10 men against Holland in the semi-final and just dig in for penalties from very early on. And, you know, they made defending seem just as exciting as maybe the attacking football that the French were playing during that tournament. It was just absolutely fantastic to watch. And I think the one thing to say is that, I mean, let's look at the age of Barzagli. You look at the age of Chiellini. You look at the age of Buffon. I suppose one question you've got to ask, are they the last of a dying breed? Do Italy produce defenders like that? The evidence of them not being at the World Cup suggests that that is almost certainly the case. So it's almost as if, you know, it's enjoy them while you still can. And I suppose, you know, casting aside Tottenham's misery is that we get to see more of Buffon in the Premier League because, as well as being a great goalkeeper, he's great to watch with all the sort of side issues and showmanship that you were chatting about before.
Yeah. John, one thing we have missed out on tonight by having you on the phone, and I'm sorry to have allowed you to miss this, and it's something that we alluded to there. Apparently there has been a caller already to BBC 606 saying if Spurs don't win the FA Cup, Pochettino has to go.
There we go.
Really? That wasn't me, as you know.
I wasn't blaming you. I'm just saying that you put the thought out there in the universe, so perhaps somebody has picked up on that.
Well, I mean, you know, Tottenham are the glory club. They were the club that used to win the FA Cup quite a lot when I was a lad, you know. It's their home stadium. Why shouldn't they win the FA Cup?
Yeah, there you go. We'll see what happens anyway, how it unfolds. John, thanks very much for your time. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Cheers.
Yeah.
At least we're ending the Tottenham chat on a note of optimism. Yeah. Why can't they win the FA Cup?
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes anyway. As you said, maybe John's touching on there. They probably do need to win something now.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be back after this break.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back to the football show. We have a text in. Are Spurs really building something bigger, or is it actually as good as their team are going to get? Surely the likes of Kane won't be hanging around with no sign of success. What do you think of that?
There's a chance that Kane will hang around. Loyalty is a strange thing in football. It's not necessarily something you can take for granted.
Paul and Klontoff as well.
Paul, how are you? I think, hand on heart, Kane will be there next season. I think he's going to be there for the new stadium and all that kind of thing. The point I was making now during the break was, it's not like PSG last night, where PSG will look back on the tie with Juventus or with Real Madrid and think, yeah, do you know what? We weren't really at it. We didn't do ourselves justice over the course of the two legs. Spurs will look at this and, on a couple of occasions, had the tie within their grasp.
Yeah.
Could have put one of the premier sides, as John mentioned, the team that's been to the final in the last couple of years twice, could have put one of the best sides in Europe out in the last 16 and ultimately let it slip. They performed almost, not necessarily exactly at, but almost to the peak of their abilities and still lost. And I think that, to a degree, is what's going to hurt Spurs the most, because if you perform at your best and still lose, you kind of turn around and after that and then go, what now, what's it actually going to take? Yeah. You know,
that's where you get that flat feeling from it. It's just like, you know that, like, it's like that sigh almost, isn't it, now with it? Because you watch Tottenham play tonight, and as you're alluding to there, they've played so well, they've played at the maximum, essentially. They were so good apart from
for vast chunks. There was a couple, and it's those couple of occasions where they weren't at their maximum.
Well, you look at
where defensively, and there were a couple of mental lapses. Davinson Sanchez is obviously peak. But there was those couple of lapses.
Ben Davies in the first game giving the penalty away.
And that's where you get punished.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is incredible how it's fine moments. I mean, apart from that initial 10, 11 minutes in the first leg, dominant tonight, totally dominant. So it is. It is absolutely amazing the way it's gone tonight, I suppose. Yeah.
We have to mention as well, Manchester City have been beaten.
I know.
Not that it matters much, of course, but they are through to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They're the second Premier League team through. They lost 2-1 on the night to Basel. Gabriel Jesus prodded them in front after just 8 minutes, but El Yunusi levelled for Basel with 17 minutes played, and the winner came from Michael Lang, not the promoter of Woodstock back in 1969, but he put them in front 19 minutes from time, and it's there they stayed. Basel winning 2-1 on the night, but exit 5-2 on aggregate. And in the Championship tonight, Wolves 3-0 winners away to Leeds. Benik Afobe getting the third after first half goals from Roman Sass and Willy Bully, and they are now 6 points clear of Cardiff at the top of the Championship. Before we head off, Martin O'Neill names his first Republic of Ireland squad of 2018 tomorrow. It's for that friendly in Antalya, not a freeloading junket for some people.
We are actually hoping to get Sean Maguire on tomorrow night as well. So
it is a friendly in Turkey, so with that there is a little bit of room to experiment, and we're expecting Seanie obviously to be in there too, and Declan Rice. Can you see any more bolters getting into the squad tomorrow?
Yeah, there was talk of Josh Cullen as well, who's been on the bench for West Ham. Alan Brown, I suppose, given the form that he's been shown at Preston, although he has been around the squad before. But yeah, I think it'd be maybe a couple of new faces coming in, so we look forward to it, and we'll see how that goes tomorrow when Martin O'Neill makes that squad announcement, I suppose, won't we?
And we'll get to have Nathan Murphy pose the question about what he thinks of Northern Irish hurlers and all that kind of thing, and how often they attend mass, and what is their exact criteria for recruiting players from the opposite side of the border. But there you go, it's Martin O'Neill naming his first squad of 2018.
We have got one quick text to get through as well. Sorry, Rich. Does Kev think that an English team will win the Champions League? That's from Darren in Nace.
Do you, Kev? Do you think an English team will win the Champions
League? I think City or Liverpool have got a great chance. I do.
Yeah.
I do. But
if you look at
Real Madrid last night, you see Real Madrid being so strong. And
the old dog for the hard road.
Yeah.
That, like, when you see Juve tonight, when you see Real, I know there was a slightly more youthful tint to that Real side last night, but it's having that knowledge of that area of the competition is a hell of an advantage.
I know.
It's a hell of an advantage for sides. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah, well, OTB AM is back tomorrow morning at 7:45. It'll have Nathan Murphy alongside Gavin Hastings, Dave McIntyre, Alan Quinlan, ahead of Ireland's massive game against Scotland in the Six Nations on Saturday afternoon. You can watch it on Periscope, offtheball.com, or facebook.com, and offtheball. Tomorrow night we have John Giles, Thursday night rugby, GAA preview. Ahead of the weekend's rescheduled games, Graham Hunter, of course. Tom Dunn is up next. Thanks, Richie. Good night to everyone. Cheers.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.